So it's been a little bit over a month that we started our trek through the Hundred Acre Woods. And today we're going to continue in this study, a study that is encouraging us to go a little deeper in our relationship with Christ. Not deeper as in we want to just learn more information so that we can quote more things. Not deeper because we want to change some kind of behavior to make ourselves look better to the world. What we're doing is we're trying to look at the underlying issues in our life that are just below the surface that kind of get in the way of us living a Christian life. So we've been walking through these woods and stopping door to door, looking, listening to these characters and having chats with them and having conversations about their life. And we started at the logical place. If you're going into the Hundred Acre Woods, you have to stop by Pooh's house. And as we stopped by Pooh, we found him nuzzled up to the table, enjoying his honey pot. And there he is stuck as he indulges his life. And he just can't seem to get past the fact that he is stuck there in his honey pot, just eating and eating and eating. And then after we left Pooh's house and we talked about how we struggle with indulging our flesh, we skipped on over to Piglet's house and we talked about the idea that Piglet worries a lot. And as we began to talk with Piglet and we began to have this conversation, we found out that the reason Piglet worries is not really about worry. The underlying issue is the fact that we don't trust God enough to be God. We think it's our job to kind of sometimes give God an assistance, and that's when worry begins to happen. And then we scurried by Rabbit's house, and Rabbit was busy. Of course, that's what Rabbit is. And as we met with Rabbit, we found that Rabbit is obsessed with his own plans, even to the part that he tries to make God part of his plan versus him being part of God's plan. And because of that, Rabbit has to obsess about every single detail. And I see that in my own life sometimes. And as we left Rabbit's house, we hopped on over to meet with Kanga and Roo last week on Mother's Day. And sitting in that house, we discovered that sometimes we have a misconception about who God is. Sometimes we don't understand that God is not here to be the bad guy to judge us, but God is more like a mother. He desires to nurture and to comfort us and to bring us along. And so as we move from house to house, based on the fact that I've got my orange shirt and my black pants and my black shirt, I came down the steps this morning and my wife said, "It must be Tigger Sunday."
Hello, I'm Tigger.
Oh, you scared me.
Yeah, sure I did. Everyone's scared of Tiggers. Who are you?
I'm Pooh.
Oh, Pooh. Sure. What's a Pooh?
You're sitting on one.
I am? Oh, well, glad to meet you. Name's Tigger. T-I-double-G-R. That spells Tigger.
But what is a Tigger?
Well, he asked for it. The wonderful thing about Tiggers is Tiggers are wonderful things. Their tops are made out of rubber, their bottoms are made out of string. They're bouncy, flouncy, flouncy, pouncy, fun, 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 fun. But the most wonderful thing about Tiggers is I'm the only one. I'm the only one.
Then what's that over there?
Huh? Oh, hey, hey, look, look, look. What a strange looking creature. Look at those beady little eyes and that preposterous chin. And those ricky-tickle striped pajamas.
Looked like another Tigger to me.
Oh, no, it's not. I'm the only Tigger. Watch me scare the stripes off of this imposter. Is he gone?
All except the tail. He's gone. You could come out now, Tigger. Tigger.
Hello, I'm Tigger.
You said that.
Oh, well, did I say I was hungry?
I don't think so.
Well, then I'll say it. I'm hungry.
Oh, not for honey, I hope.
Honey? Oh, boy, honey. That's what Tiggers like best.
I was afraid of that.
Oh, say. Yuck! Tiggers don't like honey.
But you said that you liked...
That icky, sticky stuff is only fit for heffalumps and woozles.
You mean elephants and weasels.
That's what I said, heffalumps and woozles.
Well, Well, what do have, Lola, what do they do?
Oh, nothing much, just steal honey.
Steal honey?
Yeah, they sure do. Well, I better be bouncing along now, chum. Cheerio! Ooh, the wonderful thing about tickers, it's a wonderful thing. Their tops are made out of rubber, their bottoms are made out of springs. Their bouncy, trouncy, flouncy, pouncy, fun, 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 fun. But the most wonderful thing about tickers is I'm the only one. I'm the only one.
Oh, my goodness. Now, how on earth do you ever rein that back into a sermon? Don't worry. I've given a lot of thought to our good friend Tigger. Tigger's an important character to the Winnie the Pooh universe because of his marketing. Did you understand that Tigger, besides Winnie the Pooh, is the number one selling character amongst Disney characters? Take away Pooh, and Tigger comes in second. As a matter of fact, they sell more stuffed Tiggers at Disney World than they do Mickey Mouse's. Isn't that crazy? And when it comes to those T-shirts, he finishes number three on T-shirts. Tigger isn't a very popular character. And here's the funny thing, is we've been traveling through the 100-acre woods and we've been stopping house to house. Today there is no house. Huh? Well, Tigger's homeless. As a matter of fact, Tigger had absolutely no home at all. He is the only original Winnie the Pooh character. We never saw his house until we reached the 2000 movie, the Tigger movie, and they finally drew Tigger a house after about 50 years. So as we meet Tigger at this point, he's just a character that's bouncing through the woods that happens to intersect with the other characters there at various points. And as we listen to that clip, there's a lot of things that we can learn about Tiggers. I mean, the wonderful thing about Tiggers is Tiggers are wonderful things. He has a very high opinion of himself. As Tigger looks at himself, everybody must like Tiggers because Tiggers are, well, they're wonderful things. They are made for motion. How does he describe himself? His tops are made out of rubber and his bottoms are made out of springs. And he's bouncy, 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 bouncy. Fun, 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 fun. He's always looking for a new adventure. That's Tigger. And the funny thing is that Tigger sees himself as a very unique or special character because he says, I'm the only one. Now, here's the thing that always confuses me about Tigger. Is if Tigger is the only one, why does he say Tiggers are? So even in his own song, he's a little confusing because he says, I'm the only Tigger, but yet Tiggers are wonderful things. Maybe because he desires not to be the only one. By the way, see Tigger movie, and then you'll understand why that's such an important thing. So as we continue through the clip, we see that, well, he's never seen himself for what he is. I mean, he thinks he's the only one around, and as soon as Pooh points to the mirror and he says, what's that? He begins to make fun of what he sees in the mirror. So obviously, Tigger's never looked at his own life. He's just kind of bounced along. And then the really ironic thing is that he doesn't know what he likes. I mean, everything you mentioned to Tigger that's new, he says that's what Tiggers like best. But then when he tries it, Tiggers don't like that at all. And so this is a very confusing little character. And if we were going to try to talk about a person that kind of looks like a Tigger, we would use a word that maybe Tigger's a little shallow. Tigger just doesn't get life. He's only looking for the here and now. He bounces through life without giving any concern to who he's going to injure when he pounces someone like he does Pooh, how obnoxious it is, how it goes about. He just doesn't think about any of that. And we kind of see Tigger as shallow, but Tiggers, especially the spiritual ones, they're not shallow at all. As a matter of fact, if you've ever met somebody that has the Tigger syndrome from a spiritual perspective, and we're going to talk about what that is here in a few minutes here, you look at that person, and they're really kind of complex people. They can be very exasperating people. I can say that because I think I know a person that's kind of Tiggerish at times. It's dressed in an orange shirt with black shirt and black pants today. See, I can identify that the problem with these Tigger characters is a lot of times they lack contentment. Contentment is something that Tigger struggles with because they have difficulty understanding themselves and difficulty knowing what it is that they like, and so they're always looking for that one more thing that's going to make them content. And when they talk about contentment, well, they just kind of bounce around and they never seem to be satisfied. Hence the name of our sermon today is Never, never satisfied. Moving from one thing to the other in our life, just looking for the next big adventure. And so this morning we're going to take an unorthodox approach to this sermon because we're going to begin at the end and then we're going to wrap back around and we'll tie together. And we're going to begin with this verse, I can do all this through him who gives me strength. Now we quote this verse a ton because what we're attempting to do is to convince ourselves that God is in control of our life. And since God is in control, anything and everything is possible. But just for a moment, before we start talking about contentment, I want to break this verse down and let you see exactly what it is this verse is saying when we try to quote it the way we quote it. You see, this verse starts off, who? I can do. I'm looking for what it is I want to do. I can do. And then it says all this. Now, if you're a King James person, it says all things. I can do all this. So we look around and it's all possible. Everything is open. Everything is there because through him. Well, now we bring God into the equation. So I can do all of this as long as God is by my side because God strengthens me. And the problem is if I pull this verse out of context and I put this verse all by itself and I want to stand this up as my ground to say, see, anything is possible as long as it's me and God, then you realize what I'm saying. I'm saying, hey, look, if it's a success, that's all me. But if it's a failure, that's all God. And so it leads us to lack contentment because then we bounce around trying to figure out, God, why does it keep failing? Well, maybe it continues to fail because we don't understand what causes contentment. We lack it. You can tell because we're always looking for that next thing. So we lack it, and we want to figure out, what is it that I'm missing? Why is it that I keep bouncing around? Why do I need this next big thing? And maybe we lack contentment because we lack purpose. King Solomon writes in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, 8, He mentions a man that lacks this contentment. There was a man all alone. He had neither son nor brother. There was no end to his toil, yet his eyes were not content with his wealth. For whom am I toiling, he asked. And why am I depriving myself of enjoyment? This too is meaningless and a miserable business. So when Solomon begins to talk about this man, and we don't know if it's a real man, we don't know if it's a guy that Solomon was in his little tower in his castle and looked out and saw this man in the field and he sees him there every day. We don't know if this is a personal relationship with Solomon's or whether or not it was just a story he made up. But in this story, this man, he had no relationships with people. It said he had neither sons nor brothers. The assumption was you didn't see mom or dad out there working in the field with him. So he was out there trying to do all of this all by himself. And what he was doing was he was constantly working. He would get up in the morning and go out to the field and begin to plow the ground. And he would plant the seed and he would water the seed. And he was busy, 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 bouncing around this field doing all of this work. And you know what? He was prosperous. He was wealthy. What he was doing actually yielded a crop. And it says that it yielded a great crop because it says that he was prosperous. He was kind of rich. And you would think, that's cool, because you know what? If I'm out there working hard and I'm getting the money, then surely I'm happy. But as Solomon tells the story, it says he was not content. You see, because at some point this man began to look around. He began to look around at what he was doing and the work that he was getting and the money that he was accumulating, and he began to ask himself, what's the point? Why do I get up every morning and go out and do what I'm doing? For whom am I toiling? For who am I saving up for? For who am I going to impact their life? And then he comes to the conclusion that there's nobody. I'm doing all of this and there's absolutely nobody. There's no purpose behind what I'm doing. Now, we get confused because sometimes we feel if we don't have a purpose, then the very thing that we do, we can become discontent with what we are doing. You see, if I don't have a purpose in what I'm doing, then as I'm doing things and as I'm working hard at this, then eventually what I'm doing becomes discontent. I can remember 23 years ago, I walked into this four-story brick building as a very young 26-year-old man, and all the stars in the eyes, and it was my first big job as I came to work for Lexus. It was the Mickey Company back then. And then I was so excited, and I was going to learn all of this, and we were going to do all of that, and this and that and the other. And then as time went on, and it just kind of happens, I became discontent with the job. And the longer I have to do the job and I can't figure out why it is that I'm doing the job, the more discontent I become. And it affects everything in my life that I just become discontent with things. And it's because I don't understand why I'm doing what I'm doing anymore. You see, back when I was young, I was doing it for me. But now I kind of realize that it doesn't really satisfy me. Now, you need to understand, purpose will not make you happy. We get this confused a lot because a lot of times we think, if I have a purpose, then I'll always be happy about what I'm doing. I want to point to the one person that can explain this to us. His name is Jesus. And remember, Jesus came to this world with a purpose. He had a spelled out purpose. He knew exactly why he came. But do you think why he came made him happy? Obviously not. Just listen to the Garden of Gethsemane when he was there and he says, "Hey, Dad, if you can find another way that I don't have to do what I came here to do, I'm all for that. But if I have to go through with it, then I understand and I will sacrifice myself on the cross." So this idea that purpose and happiness go together, that doesn't always work. But we have to have some kind of purpose to what we're doing. Even in a church, if we're going to do something, everybody wants to know why we're doing it. Because they want to know the underlying secret. And I think a lot of us bounce through our spiritual lives and we're never content with our spiritual life. Because let's be honest, I don't know why I'm doing this. I mean, at some point in my life, I heard a sermon and I was scared I was going to go to hell, so I came forward and made some kind of a confession so that that wouldn't happen. But after a while, that kind of wears off. And I began to bounce through this life, and maybe I'm doing it because I want to be part of the church so that I can have friends and commitment around that, and that doesn't seem to work. And we go through our spiritual life, and we lack the reason that we do this because we don't understand it's all about the relationship with God. And so we struggle, and we bounce. And since we have this big hole inside of us that does not seem to be filled spiritually, then we feed our discontentment by forming what's called the desire to acquire. Jesus talked about this in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 6 through 10. "But godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it, but if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. Those who want to get rich and fall into temptation and the trap and into many foolish, harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kind of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many grief." Now, when Paul is putting this out there, he is specifically talking about money. That's what this passage is talking about. But you understand that it's not exactly about possessions. You see, because what this verse is really about is, where do you find your self-worth? If I was to ask you, what makes you valuable to your life, what is it? What is it that when you open up your life, that is what everybody says is valuable about me? Because acquiring does not mean possessions. You can desire to acquire titles. We've met these people. They love to have some kind of title in front of their name. I used to have a landlord when we were a kid, and his name was Major Blankenship. And funny thing is I found out later in life, he never was in the military. He just gave himself the name Major because he thought it sounded cool. He liked titles. And we have lots of people at a church that we like to acquire titles. Some of us like to acquire knowledge. We want to impress people with how much we can say and how much we can spout back and how much we can regurgitate back to people about, this is what makes me spiritual because I have all of this stuff in my head. Some of us like to acquire accomplishments. We like people to see, this is what I've done with my life, and we lay out our little certificates and our little trophies and all of these things that we've acquired throughout our life. And the funny thing is we just keep acquiring and we're never content with it, are we? You see, the point of this whole thing is, the attitude is you must have something new in your life. We get caught in this. We have to have that new thing in our life. And you know what the funny thing is about this? The funny thing is that you may not really want the new thing. You know, we get caught in this every now and then. You drive a car and you've had it for 10, 12, 15 years, maybe shorter than that. I don't know what your crux for cars is. But then one day you're sitting there and you're watching a television show and they come up with a commercial and there's the shiny new car. And all of a sudden, you can find everything that's wrong with your car, can't you? Well, you know, it's got a lot of miles on it. It makes this kind of noise. It has this kind of rattle. You know, it doesn't get as good gas mileage as it used to get. You know, we just begin to pick and choose and find those things that are wrong with the car. And then we finally convince ourselves that we need a new car. The funny thing is that before we saw the commercial, we were perfectly fine with the car that we had. Because the car is not the thing that we're after. It's just the idea that I've got something new in my life. You see, what you seek is the acquiring of the thing. You like the hunt. You like to go out and look for the thing that you're after. It happens in relationships. You have people that are in a relationship for a long time, and all of a sudden they begin to look around, and they like to go hunting for what's lacking in their relationship. We have this even in our spiritual lives. People come into a church, and after a while, the church kind of gets old. You've been at this church for a while, and, you know, I need something new in my life, so off we bounce to another church, because I need the newness. I need the freshness in it. And if it all isn't there, then I'm just not content. It could be a job, a relationship, a ministry. The thing is, we seek to acquire things. And once we have it, eventually become discontent with it. In Hebrews chapter 13, 5, the writer tells us, keep your lives free from the love of money. Be content with what you have, because God has said, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. The Bible keeps telling us to be content with what we have. Be content with what we've been blessed with. And that is difficult for us physically and spiritually. We are a people in a society that is driven by that which is new. We want it. We have to try it. If you've ever been to the grocery store and you walk through, what's one of the things they love to put on the side of a product when they first put it out there? New, and if it's a product they've just repackaged, and improved. Funny thing is, if you look at the new and improved, and you take that bottle, and you take it home, and you look at the bottle that's already sitting there, and you read the ingredients, you know what you're probably going to find out? They're pretty much the same thing. The new and improved could just mean that they gave it a better container or a shiny label or whatever it is. But new and improved, they know that sets something in our brain that we want to have it. We want to bounce to the next thing because if I've got the new and improved, then surely this will make my life content. So that brings us almost back to where we started. I read that verse at the beginning from Philippians chapter 4, and now I want to put it back in context. I want to look at these verses that the Apostle Paul put out there about what it really means. He says, I can do all this through Christ, through God who strengthens me. Let's read the whole thing here in verses 10 through 13. I rejoice greatly in the Lord that at last you renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned, but you had no opportunity to show it. I am not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances. I know what it is to be in need. I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living or in plenty, or plenty or in want. I can do all this through him who gives me strength. And as I began to look at this verse, Paul is not telling us that God in me makes the majority. What he's telling us is that we need to change our focus of contentment. Look at how he starts this verse on contentment. He says, I rejoice in the Lord. Right off the bat, he says, if you're going to be content, if you're going to figure this out, the first thing you have to be is thankful for what God has done in your life. You have to be willing to praise and give God rejoicing for your life. See, if I'm praising God for what I have, it's kind of hard for me then to look back at what I have and say, well, it doesn't satisfy me. It's only when I begin to stop praising God and start telling God about what I don't have that I'm able to become discontent with my life. Are you thankful for all God has done for your life? He continues on. Indeed, you were concerned, but you had no opportunity to show it. Paul is not seeking to meet his own need. He is seeking the value of relationship with people. He looked at these people and he said, I understand that you were concerned about me and you had no opportunity, but when you were given the opportunity, that was there for you also. Paul understands, I'm not trying to meet my own needs. I'm not trying to do this my way. I have to become content. And sometimes I just have to let it happen. Now, this is hard for us tiggers, because you know what? It's so much easier just to bounce to the next thing. Instead of waiting for God to provide the solution, it is so much easier for me to force the issue, become discontent with my life, and begin to bounce around, trying to make myself satisfied yet again. But we have to understand there are people in our lives that are concerned for us. There are people that look out for us. God has put them in our path for a reason. And sometimes we just need to be still and know that He is God. We continue walking through this verse. I know that I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. We have to, if you're going to be content, you have to figure out the difference between need and want. Let me say that again. If you're ever going to figure out how to be content, you have got to figure out between the difference between need and want. I have kids. And you know what they always tell me when something comes out? Oh, Daddy, I need that. Oh, I need. No, you don't. You don't. You don't need it. You want it. You see, because God tells us that if we have Him, we have clothes, we have food, needs are met. Everything else is want. If I've got breath in my lungs and food on my table and I've got God on my side, then I can be content with just that, because everything else is gravy on the mashed potatoes. It's all good. We have to remember that. A lot of times we take our wants, we turn them into needs, and then when those needs aren't met, then you know what? We become discontent with our life, and it happens. We begin to bounce. As Paul continues on through this verse, it says, I have learned the secret of being content in any situation. Now, I like this little portion of this verse because this is a learned process. That gives me some solace in the fact that I too can learn how to be content. Paul didn't start off with this contentness. As a matter of fact, if you go back to the beginning of Paul's life, he was a very discontent individual, and he was just trying to climb the religious ladder to get to the top. And he says, now, here I am, and I am writing this letter to you, the church of Philippi, and I have learned a secret about being content, which means if I can learn it, it's possible. And then he puts that verse out there. I can do all this through him who strengthens me. And you go, what? Wait a minute, you skipped the steps? Where's the lesson? Where's the lesson on how to be content? You're supposed to tell me the secret. You aren't supposed to just jump forward and say, me and God makes the majority, because that puts me right back where I started. Well, you understand where Paul is writing this epistle from? Prison. He's sitting in a cell. I don't know how big it is. He doesn't have television. He doesn't have any outside visitors. He's kind of just there. He is writing this from prison. And Paul says from here, I understand my needs are met. And God is with me. Therefore, I can do all this, and the this is contentment. I can be content with this simply because I have enough. That's important. Is enough enough? Do you have enough in your life to say, you know what? God, thank you. See, that's the secret. Job puts it this way in Job chapter 36, verse 11. If they obey and serve him, they will spend the rest of their days in prosperity and their years in contentment. If you make God your focus, contentment is rather easy. Because I can look at my life each and every day and see how God is working. And so the question becomes, are you ready to stop bouncing? Are you tired of how your life is going? You know, you try this, and you try that, and you try the other thing, and maybe this works for a little while, but eventually that doesn't work either. And I move over here, man, we switch careers, we switch relationships, we switch gods at some times. Simply because inside of me, I want to be content. I'm just not happy with my life. Now, happiness and commitment does not go together. You can be very content, but have unhappy moments in your life. Contentment is this inner peace within you to say, you know what? Unless they can take God away from me, there's nothing they can do to me. Unless they can separate me from God, there is absolutely nothing else in this life that matters. And God says, you know what? There isn't a power on this earth that can separate you from God. Can you allow that to be your contentment and stop just bouncing through your life, doing the things that you're doing because you're trying to feed an appetite? We're going to do a time of decision, and I encourage you to start thinking about what is it in your life you're looking for to make yourself content. If you came up with any answer except for God, I'll go ahead and tell you the end of the story. It's not going to work. There is nothing on this planet that is going to make you content with your life unless God is part of that life. So let me encourage you during this time of decision. Maybe you have never accepted Christ as your personal Lord and Savior. You don't have that base relationship. This song is for you. If you want to come forward, we'll put you with somebody to turn the pages of the Bible and help you understand what it means to have a relationship. But if you're here today and you've made that decision, but you still find your life discontent, let me tell you, it's because you've lost your focus. Remember that interesting fact I told you about Tigger at the very beginning of the sermon? It wasn't just because I wanted to tell you an interesting fact so you could answer a Jeopardy question later on. Tigger was the only character that was homeless. He never had a place that he planted his flag and he says, this is where my life centers. And so he just bounces through the little cartoon for 50-some years. Are you doing that in your life? Or have you planted your flag on God as your home? He is the center of your life. Because if you've done that, and if you're doing that on a daily basis, you'll find yourself more content in what you're doing. And you'll find that God is willing to give you more to do so that you learn more about him and your contentment will just expand. Love to tell you, I've got that all mastered. I'm still working on it. But I'm still learning. But if you're here today and you need to make a commitment to have your life more content, come on forward. We'll pray about it and we'll put it before God. Decisions are always about what you need to do. So give it some thought. Would you please stand? We're going to pray.